Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel center resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, assistant professor of systematic theology at Midwestern Seminary, Dr. Ronnie Kurtz. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I feel like we're settling into a rhythm here.
Yeah.
It's felt weird for a long time doing the video.
Yeah.
First, we pivoted to video.
Yeah. How many episodes in are we now?
Like, I don't know. I should have counted just for the 15, sake of this
16.
Conversation. Something like that, because when we meet to record, we do several episodes at once.
Yeah.
So it's probably more than I realize.
Yeah.
Even though we've only had three or four recording sessions, mm-hmm. we probably have 16, 20 episodes or something in there. I don't know. I've not looked at the numbers, and I'm not going to ask Daniel. He's doing his Hebrew homework anyway.
Shout out to Daniel.
Thanks for being on the ball, Daniel.
Hey, Daniel's the man. Shout out to Daniel.
No, he gets everything going. Shot our photos, got the cameras going,
yeah.
And then he zones out
and
like
he's
everyone
exegeting Hebrew.
Yeah. If I were him, I would not be listening
to
us.
There is something
either.
Spiritually good happening in this room, even if it's not us.
You know what? Where was I even going with that? What were we talking about?
The rhythms of the videos.
Oh, the rhythms of the videos.
Yeah. You don't know if the numbers are good.
Oh, yeah, right. We could check with the comms to see what our numbers are.
I would imagine
we do better still on audio.
I think we do better when we don't even care about numbers. That's how we
are. Oh, yeah,
you
know? Yeah. We're not attractional ding-dongs.
That's right,
you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know, like, if people are actually
I have no clue.
Watching on YouTube or what have you. But it's been a major change because we've had to think through, you know, not just like what material we bring or that sort of thing, but like we have to bring outfit changes.
Yeah.
We have to bring wardrobe because we can't wear the same clothes on every
episode.
Although
in
I
a row.
Did that in a, because in our last session, I think it was the last session, I picked out all the, you know, the changes of clothes that I wanted. And I forgot to put them in my car. And I didn't realize until I got here, I forgot to put the clothes in. And so I wore the exact same thing.
I wonder if anyone noticed.
I don't think anyone noticed. You would really have to be paying close attention. Although I will say, some people are noticing things. My mom, who watched the podcast.
Yeah, shout out.
I don't know if she watches every episode, but shout out to Karen. Karen watched the podcast and she said, "Who's that in the photo over your shoulder?"
She the first time it's
like
being
a family
mentioned.
Member or a departed. It is a departed.
It
person,
is a departed.
But not in the way that you're thinking.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, in the tight shot, maybe you can see who's the person in the.
Yeah, it's funny when people point out like really random stuff about like, "Oh, I noticed you have this tick. Whenever Jared says this, you like do that."
Or, weird.
You know, yeah. So people are watching, man. So you better change those clothes.
That's really too close.
Yeah.
Attention. I don't like that at all.
See, we've talked about this before, actually, in one of this session's recordings. I'm not a huge podcast guy.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely not a video podcast guy.
Oh, me either.
Yeah.
But it is wild
how many people are. They won't watch
it. How do they have the time?
I don't know.
Is it like watching TV?
Well, I mean, I don't want to criticize them because I'm thankful they're watching us. But I think it's kind of like on in the background or, I don't know, maybe they sit down and this is their homework for the week.
I cannot imagine. But maybe it's a generational thing because I may look at my phone a few times, but if I'm watching a movie or watching a TV show, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm watching that.
Yeah.
The idea that it would be, I would be looking at another screen while I have another screen.
Yeah.
I read recently Netflix, maybe other streamers, somebody, you know, why is the quality going down of like, especially like writing for these original shows? And they're writing for people who aren't watching. So sometimes exposition.
That's crazy.
They're narrating exposition or they're saying things that they're doing, which is poor writing.
Yeah.
Because they know most of their viewers or their core viewer at least isn't actually watching the show. They're just listening to it while they look at their phone.
That's crazy.
And that to me is just. You know,
I hate it.
Like
so
I go to the movie
much.
Theater and there's people who are looking at their phones. I'm like, why are you even here? Why would you buy a ticket?
Dude, one of the most offensive, like we talk about beefs. I guess I'm having a beef well up within me.
Yeah.
One of the things that like annoys me the most is when I'm trying to show someone a piece of media, like a song I love or a movie I love, and they're distracted. I'm like, why do you hate me? And why are you the way that you are? Like, I hate it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think those things are kind of like, Yeah, you can't make somebody have the same wonder.
I know.
I mean, it's very similar to like...
But the few times it does happen, you're like, yeah. I love you. when they get it.
I remember showing, you know, like, especially with like music, sometimes with movies, but like when my kids were little, exposing them to good music, and they're just like, because it was like dad's music, I guess. And then there was a day, particularly with my younger daughter, they hated like the Beach Boys and different things like that. And I'm like, no, it's actually genius and you don't realize it. Yeah. It may sound like bubblegum stuff, but Brian Wilson is a genius, I promise you. And they're just like, this is so stupid. Every song's about surfing. but then she's going away to college.
Yeah.
And we took her to the record store and she wanted to get some records and
she
got Pet Sounds. And I was like, yeah, so it comes back around.
It
you know, has a way of sneaking up on you. Speaking of influencing children.
Something
that when they're little you may not know is it feeding them. Let's talk about kids in church.
Kids in church, man. Let's talk about it.
I think we did, maybe it was when Ross was around, we'd had a mailbag episode that was something about kids in church or something.
Okay.
We've talked here and there, I think in minor ways. But I wanted to talk about the subject in general because it can be a touchy subject.
Oh, yes. I have two of those.
Okay.
Kids. They are very much the like nuisance and awesome, and they can be both of those things in a 2-minute time period in church. So I have a 5-year-old daughter and a 2-year-old son. So I'm very much in this world.
Yeah. It has come up on social media before, and, you know, just you sometimes occasionally will hear complaints, about churches that do not want kids in the worship gathering and who maybe even actively are trying to steer parents of children to go to the available childcare. Our preference here is that you would not bring your kids into the service, and it always sort of sparks a backlash, seems to divide, seems to polarize. My experience has been largely in, or at least in the last, you know, 20 years, churches where kids are welcome in the service. But that's not without its challenges. Mm-hmm. So I thought we could just talk about that.
Yeah.
We had a visitor. This was a fellow who come. I think he listens to the podcast, actually. I won't say his name because I don't want to put his business on Front Street, as the kids say.
Is that what they say?
I think. I heard a kid once say that in church, actually. Also I can't remember his name. But anyway, he visited recently, and he said, so he came to Liberty Baptist because he listens to the podcast, and he's heard, you know, us talk about Liberty Baptist. So he's a youth pastor. He had some teenagers that he was bringing, and they were in town for a conference or a youth something and stayed over and came to church. And so they were visiting. And he and his wife, they have small children. And he said in his follow-up email that they were a little worried about, man, they were going to bring in their kids into the service. And then they felt so at home and comfortable.
Oh, that's sweet.
Because not only were they welcomed well, in fact, we had, there was a big group and they came in late. And we had, I was so proud of our church. We had several rows of members who went down to the overflow room to make space.
Wow.
So this group could all sit together.
That's crazy.
I was just so moved as like, I was, yeah, super proud. But he just said, man, to see so many kids in the service, to see that it was okay, that it was welcomed, that was encouraging to him. And it was encouraging to me that he felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, it entails necessarily, I think, parents who are intentionally, consciously trying to train their children well about how to sit in a service.
Yes.
So as someone with small children now, I'm assuming you bring your kids into the worship gathering, or do you?
Yeah, we go back and forth.
Okay.
So sometimes they'll go up with kids, sometimes they'll hang with us.
Yeah, I mean, we have childcare available.
That's right.
But it's normative in our church for
parents
to bring their even small children into the service.
Yes. Yeah. So what was your question you were going to ask?
Well, I was going to say, what are some things that you guys do to kind of settle your kids or get them, you know, acclimate them to the service, those sorts of things.
So
I'm sure we have parents who are listening going, man, I'm trying to bring my kids in, but man, they're squirming.
And I know there's like a spectrum of conviction. We are not like one of the church I was at in Ohio, one of the pastors was more like kind of the Vody Bauckham family discipleship,
family integrated.
Like he never sent his children to the children's service. They always, since birth, they were in the service. And other pastors of that same church consistently sent their children. And to be totally frank, I am okay with the whole spectrum.
Sure.
So one of the things I would say as just like an overarching principle, and this is not brilliant, is just whether you are the one with kids or the one without kids, is just let the love of neighbor, the love of your church members be the guiding principle.
Yeah.
So that if you're the one with kids, be the one with kids who's consciously thinking about your brothers and sisters in the service. So that I think the wrong attitude is like, I'm gonna bring my kids to service and no one's gonna stop me. And there's nothing that nothing's gonna take my kid out of the service,
right,
because
right,
I believe they need to see me worshiping Jesus. Like I'm with you on the like, it's good for them to see mom and dad worshiping the Lord, but I'm not with you on like, no matter what it costs to other people, yeah, I'm gonna do this. That is just not a gospel mindset. The gospel mindset is I'll lay down my rights for your good so that, yeah, bring your kids into service. They're totally welcome. I bring my kids into service sometimes, but I'm conscious. Like I know if I bring a coloring book, my daughter's probably gonna be engaged more.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm like, if I'm snackless, my son might be a terrorist.
Right, little
you
snacks.
Know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's small things like that. And what it looks like as a parent of small kids to be cognizant of the non, you know, the other members in the room is if my kid, if they're fussing or something, like, you know intuitively, there is a level of acceptability of whining and crying. Like little murmurs here and there, it's fine, that happens.
Yeah.
But when they start losing it, get them out of the room,
yeah,
for the sake of other people. And then flip to the other side, the members. This is where I'm always gonna say they can have the space they need. You know, if I'm, you know, this is a Sunday where my wife and I have sent our kids up to the children's ministry and they actually went. And I have another parent in the auditorium who's like, their baby's losing it. You know what I'm gonna think? I'm not gonna think, what are they doing? Get out of here.
I think that sometimes.
Yeah. Maybe I will on some days.
Yeah.
What I want to say is like, man, I know that feeling. That is hard. That's a hard feeling when your baby's losing it and you're trying to keep them in the service. And at some point, of course, hopefully they should go out. But that's what it looks like to submit to one another.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to cultivate.
Yeah. Well, you know, in some ways, to the extent that I'm able, trying to identify who it is. And if it's like a visitor or something, you know, I want to advocate for them in my heart. Well, I want to do that for everybody, but like, you know, if it's somebody who, they're a stranger, you know, maybe there's a discomfort with putting a child in child care.
That's exactly right.
I mean, they don't know us.
Yes.
They don't trust those, you know, child care workers, or they don't know those child care workers. I could understand that. Maybe it's difficult for that child to be away from mom or dad, or, you know, maybe the child, you know, is being, you know, unruly and inconsolable, but there's something that is happening in the service that is really ministering to that single mom's soul or something where she can't draw herself away because there's something that the Lord is doing in her. I'm trying to think through things like that makes it at least, you know, bearable, acceptable, you know, it's, you know, forgivable in the moment. If we have, you know, longtime members and there's an inconsolable child, I'm not talking about like you said.
No, I know what you mean.
Just the normal din of children. To me, especially when I'm preaching, the line is I'm now competing with the child.
Yeah.
It's like just the normal hubbub of kids in the service. That's being a family.
That's right.
That's having, you know, family in the room. Even like a baby begins to cry, they're hungry. Let me, you know, here's the bottle.
Right.
Here,
that's right.
You know, whatever. Here's this, and oh yeah, that's all. You know, that's nothing. But then when it's like ongoing, unaddressed, and now I'm having to raise my voice to talk over that, you know, in a sustained way.
Let's
like,
try it. I'll cry. You try to preach.
I'm like, that's a disruption.
Yes,
it's distracting me from what the Lord has, you know, the agenda that the Lord has for me with these people. It's distracting the people around you. And sometimes in my head, I'm thinking, I don't know what's going. I can assume what's going on in their head is they're going to stop any moment now. I can get them to stop. But when that becomes not the case, I sometimes wonder, like, you know, maybe it's time to. We even have, you know, we have a cry room where you can hear the message. So, like, you don't even have to not hear the message. One of the things we've done, just as a culture, like, not even just programmatically as a church, but because it's such a value for us,
is whenever, you know, someone maybe who's visiting or who comes in, who's newer, kind of raises a question about all the kids in the service kind of thing. We're just very quick to say that's really important to us here.
Yeah.
You know, we have that as a value at our church, and you know, we're kind, you know, we're charitable about it, but it's a way of trying to say, like, if that's something that's going to be a hindrance for you, then our church is probably, like, that's, we're right, not going to change that. Yes. It's very valuable to our families, mm-hmm, and to our parents to be able to bring their kids in. But we have so many mindful and conscientious parents that they bring in little snacks, they, mm-hmm, bring in coloring books. You know, some things that, that other churches do is they'll have, like, kids' versions of sermon notes, yeah, or, and it may have more to do with kind of, you know, drawing a picture of what's, mm-hmm, being talked about in the sermon or something, or a coloring page related to the Bible passage, mm-hmm, or something like that, just so that there's a kid level version of what's happening. And what's been really neat at our church is seeing kids kind of grow up over the last, oh, few, yeah, years and mature in that space, so that, you know, little kids getting their first big, you know, big girl or big,
yes,
boy Bible.
Yes, yes.
And following, I just got a message last week from a dad who was like, hey, our daughter just got her first, like, real, like, non-story Bible, Bible. Yeah. And it's in the CSB, so she can follow along, oh, with, wow, the sermon. And she's following along. And I have noticed the last 2 weeks, this same young girl, she's probably 7 maybe, has come up to me after the service and said, I really liked the sermon today. She's so,
man,
like, she's like a little woman in a little girl's body.
Yes.
She has such a much, you know, this, like,
that'll keep
sophisticated
you going,
way.
Yes.
But it just was so heartwarming. It's like,
yes,
it's so important for her. She wants to, like, mom and dad pay attention. She wants to get something out of it. So she's tracking along in her little Bible. We've got kids who use the sermon note card. We have a card in the seat backs that has, like, sermon notes, and it's just lines, and we'll have kids who use it to draw on and, mm-hmm, things like that, but also kids that are, like, they're off the screen, they're seeing,
yeah,
the message,
yeah,
points, and they're transcribing. And I have a couple of kids who will present those notes to me afterwards, like, they come and they give me their sermon notes, and
that's
such a precious
thing.
That's
the good stuff, man.
Yeah. And that would not happen if they were whisked away to some,
yes,
you know, children's church for the duration. And I know, you know, again, we have childcare for, you know, parents who, you know, want to avail themselves of that. But those kids get to that stage because they've been in that environment for a while, and they're looking around and they're seeing not just, mm-hmm, mom and dad, but, mm-hmm, you know, what we might call, you know, spiritual uncles and aunts, mm-hmm, everywhere, you know, singing, you know, the songs and listening to the sermon and having their Bibles open in their lap, and they want to do that.
Yes.
They want to see that. It's a great way to cultivate that spiritual,
amen,
hunger in,
amen,
in your kids. Yeah. How about some advice, counsel for pastors? You know, when you know that your church is full of kids and there's kids in the service, they're not my primary audience, but I'm certainly mindful,
oh,
of,
yes,
them.
Yeah.
Things that, it can get challenging sometimes if you've got certain subject matter in text and you think, ah, how do I, you know, a couple of years ago we were doing a relationship series, and there was one message in particular that was on sex, on marital sex. And we let our families know, like, ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I was like, look, this isn't going to be a crass thing. I'm not doing Mark Driscoll, like, mm-hmm, we're not talking about sex positions or anything. It's not going to be gross or obscene, but this is the subject.
That's right.
And it's from 1 Corinthians 7. I'm doing an exposition. So I'm not telling you, you know, what to do, but I want you to be aware.
Yeah. If so they can make an informed,
yeah,
decision.
Yeah, they can make a decision. Just for, you know, that, yeah, may be a Sunday you want to avail yourself of childcare if you'd prefer to avoid uncomfortable conversations. If you don't believe,
yes,
your kid is ready to just hear,
yeah,
the word sex or the language about it, you know. You know, so just things like that. Mm-hmm. I even think through sometimes illustrations. Again, I'm not, you know, thinking of the children as my primary audience. But I might want to, you know, use certain language or use certain illustrations that, this last Sunday in particular, I wondered, I used the illustration about, you know, a cup with, you know, water in it and gets jostled, what's inside comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, this is a picture from 2 Corinthians 4, the jars of clay, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it's broken open, you see what's inside. And I wondered, I was like, that might be a kid level illustration. I talked about holding, you know, I didn't act it out, or I didn't have a cup, but I was like, a cup of water, and if you shake it, water,
yeah,
comes out, you know.
Yeah.
that's the kind of thing that I think when I was a little kid, that would lodge in my brain. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I might not totally understand when the pastor's talking about the difference between necrosis and thanatos, but when he's talking about a cup of water that gets jostled.
Yeah, you're like, I've done that.
Yeah.
And I think, too, it's totally permissible and sometimes good to directly call the kids' attention. Mm-hmm. I don't think you maybe should do it like every sermon necessarily, but like, hey, kids, for this next one, I actually want you to kind of tune in with me.
Right.
And maybe look at me for the next like 2 minutes.
Right.
And you give like an application for them because they're part of the flock.
Absolutely.
And you're pastoring them as well, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if the application point or the pastoral charge really is applicable to children.
Yes. You know, there's obviously the famous passage in Matthew 19 of the people bringing children to Jesus. Yes. And the disciples rebuking them.
Yeah.
And Jesus saying, no, such, you know, for such as the kingdom is for such as these. And it reminds me of churches that either shame or cordon off children from the service. And I just think the only reason you would do that is if your worship gathering is thought of in terms of a production.
That's exactly right.
Right, this is a theater experience that mm-hmm. cannot have even the low-grade distractions of people who aren't totally focused. If your service is a production or performance in some way, it makes total sense that you're trying to control or limit childlike distractions. I just saw last night in my social media feed a clip from a tennis match recently. I don't know what's going on right now, if it's the Australian Open or something.
Okay,
I mean, I don't know what it is, but there's something going on right now in the tennis world. And there was a child, I guess, being, I couldn't hear the child in the video, but one of the players was complaining because in golf, at tennis matches, the crowd is expected to be quiet during play. And the umpire asked the player, do you want me to have the child removed? And the player said yes, and the other player said yes. They both they wanted the kid out, and I thought, that's their prerogative. I mean, how it is for tennis, but church isn't a
tennis
Wimbledon.
Match. Yeah.
You know, it isn't Australian Open. Like that we should not have the same attitude. It's not a production. It's not a performance. So if you're listening to this and like your church has a spotty record on whether kids are welcome in the service, begin thinking through, like, what's the service for?
Mm-hmm.
Who's it for? Mm-hmm. What are we actually trying to do here? Is this a family meeting? Like, is this a family? Are we a body that's joining together? Or are we trying to put on a little concert here and we can't have, childish distractions?
That's right.
We talked about how to practice. I kind of had that as the next place to go, but we've already done that. Activity, snacks, get them a big boy or big girl Bible maybe, or just, help them track if at their level, if they're at the stage where they can. But I just think like if you become overly, conscious or embarrassed about the garden variety den mm-hmm. of small children, you won't actually train them to, if you're constantly whisking them out.
Yes.
That is in and of itself a distraction.
Yes, I totally agree. Yeah, and just again back to that at the beginning, just having the mindset of how can I serve the others, and then whether you're the one with the kids or without the kids, I think is just going to lead you to wise practices. So, but man, I love, when my daughter is in the car on the way home from church and she says, "Hey, why did Pastor Tyler say that?"
Hmm.
Like, man, I'm glad you asked. Or even I know this can sound odd, but like. We take the Lord's Supper every week at Emmaus Church, and I love telling my daughter, like, hey, there's a reason mom and dad can take this meal, but you cannot.
Yeah.
And I lose that gospel witness if she's not with me, And she's not come with me every service. Like I said, we go back and forth, but man, there's a lot of benefit there. And one more kind of last thing I'll say here is I do think if you're going to have the family mindset where this isn't just production, but we are actually marching towards the promised land as a collective body, which by the way includes young children.
Yeah.
I would say the adults should take focus borderline as a spiritual discipline.
Mm.
Because if a child is losing it and you are so easily distracted that you can't stay in tune with the pastor, I actually think that says more about you than the child or the parent.
Mm.
I want my members to be able to focus on the word and focus on what's being said. Now, of course, there's when it's like the level of competition, of course, it's big. But then, having that like mindset of like, no, I want to discipline myself to focus. Mm. And then just, you know, again,
why do you expect more maturity out of a child?
It's exactly right. It's exactly right. Yeah. And then, yeah, again, last word is we say this often at Emmaus is now, like Liberty, probably we are unique in the sense of the sheer number of young children we have. I mean, they're about to be the largest population group at our church. And that's incredible because it is a entirely ripe mission field.
Yeah.
Every Sunday, we have an entire constituency of non-believers who come to our church to be fed, which is, I mean, we couldn't ask for a better gift than that.
Yeah.
And thinking of it like that is, it will change the way you treat the children in your church.
Yeah. That's a, you know, a good point to sort of mention as an encouragement of like, why would you begrudge this when there are so many churches where you do not hear the sound of children? I was in a church, you know, I went to a church that, you know, was mostly older folks, and they maybe, you know, there was a couple of young families maybe. And when I say couple, I like literally mean maybe two. And so it had been a long time since there were babies in the church. And suddenly, as we began to grow and grow younger, there's young couples, young singles who find, you know, who meet each other and get married. And,
yeah.
And then suddenly there's like crying babies in the church.
Yeah.
And that's a sign of life.
Yeah, you know what that sound means? That means the church might continue after
that's
you.
That's right. The church has legs.
Yes.
So don't, you know, don't get disgruntled or begrudge the presence of children in your church. If you enjoy the podcast, dear listener, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen to or watch your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church.